Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Here's another Saturday Magazine podcast brought to you by Joy sponsor, Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Across Melbourne on Joy 94.9 and streaming online at joy.org.au, you're listening to Saturday Magazine, every Saturday, 10 till 12.
Many of you who are car enthusiasts, and even some of you are not, will know the name Paul Gover. He's been a motoring journo and also been a general news journo in his earlier career for probably longer than he cares to remember. How are you, Paul?
40 years, Macca.
40 years
as a motoring journalist. Yeah,
oh, God, you've got
over 40 years.
God,
a little bit longer than that as a general journalist.
You'll get it right eventually, won't you?
Well, you know, it depends what brands I'm writing about.
First off, it's always an interesting industry, and yes, I work in the industry, so I'm not going to comment about brands specifically. I don't think that's right, but it's been a very interesting year. We've seen car sales remain buoyant, light commercial sales, truck sales. The whole industry will set another record again for the year, which sort of puts paid to some of the economic doom that people are talking. From your perspective, Paul, why is the industry still selling cars and vehicles in record numbers when other parts of the economy are really being, I wouldn't say hit hard, but they're feeling a pinch. They're feeling a pretty strong pinch.
Well, I think, really, if you look at it, Macca, nobody in the car industry, with the exception of some of the top-end brands, is really making any money. So the pricing these days has never been better. You know, basically, you can buy a car today for the same price as you could 10 years ago, except it's got a whole lot more stuff in it. So car value is fantastic. I think if you look at cities like Sydney, Melbourne, Brisbane, real estate values are up, and people don't see a problem in using some of that equity to get themselves into a new car. And obviously, you know, lots of jobs these days, they package up a car as part of a deal. But to me, the whole fundamental reason why things are going so well is basically about affordability. The value is fantastic. And people are turning their cars over more often as a result of that. You know, that it's not that expensive to get into a new car. So away they go and they go again. But
how many cars, just in rough figures, how many vehicles have you driven this year, Paul?
I started to add it up one year, but I got way out of context. Something in excess of 1,000 different cars, probably. If you think about it, I have a different car every week, but usually it averages out to two different cars a week. So there's 100 before you get started. You go to a press launch, you drive four or five different cars. So you go to 20 or 30 different press launches, and then people get you to drive their cars. Yeah, one year I added it up, and I got well over 500. And then I lost count. So maybe that's something for me to do this year. But the number of cars I do, when you look at it, it's just extraordinary. Because even when you go to, as I say, if you go to a press launch, you might drive three or four different cars in one day, different versions of the same car and stuff. So, and the stuff I've driven this year has sort of gone from the, I can't think of a suitably down-market word for it. I drove a Mahindra SUV. Right through to Bentleys and Lamborghinis this year. So, you know, if you look at it from the very bottom to the very top, there's been some amazing stuff that I've driven. And that's one of the things I love about this industry. You know, there's always something happening, always something new, something different.
So tell us, Paul, you've driven, you know, that many cars this year. What have been some of the standouts for you, the highlights of 2016?
There's a whole bunch of things. It depends how much money you're talking about and what sort of cars you're talking about. We just did our car of the year judging. I was surprised at how good the new Honda Civic is this year, because Honda made some completely rubbish cars in recent years, but the Civic's actually back to the quality you expect of that brand. And while I was in Europe, I drove a thing called the NSX, which is their Super Ute Go Fast car. It's astonishingly good in the technology that's in, except that in Australia they decided, since they weren't going to get very many, they'd rip people off by charging $100,000 more than the car. The car's just over 400,000 in Australia. When you do the conversion, even allowing for our taxes and things against the English price, it should be 300,000. So that's an interesting situation, but that's one brand. I'm continually amazed by how much improvement the Korean car companies are making every year in the quality and comfort and refinement of their cars. And at the top end, and this is not a paid Macca commercial or anything, Mercedes-Benz just does amazing technology these days. You know, the stuff that's in the cars, from things like, there's the new E-Class they have has the biggest TFT dashboard screen I've ever seen. It's just gloriously wonderful. But they're also continually inventing technology to save us from killing ourselves, which is fascinating when you see the police come out every week and say that the downturn in the road toll, although it's up this year, is all about speed cameras and booze buses, without thinking about the amazing technology that's saving lives, down to the development of the car companies.
It's actually pretty hard to kill yourself in a car below a certain speed. The technology in cars, all cars, and the crash survivability, you have to be pretty determined or pretty bloody stupid, or both. And
that's what I wanted to ask, Paul, in terms of, I guess, improvements, or in whether it's technology or whatever it may be, what in 2016 was something new that came out of this industry that really surprised you and that you really loved, whether it's a new feature of something that's aesthetic or whether it's technology, whatever it may be? What in relation?
Well, the stuff that's coming out, and it's the reverse. I actually hate it. It's autonomous cars. If you listen to the technologists around the world, they'll all tell you that we'll all be driving autonomous cars within 5 years, and they point to the fact that there are cars that can now drive themselves and how wonderful and marvellous they are. And from where I'm sitting, it's complete and utter rubbish. And when you talk to the people at the car companies who are actually doing the development work, it's not going to happen for at least another 10 or 15 years. But if you listen to the people around the world talking about, gee, isn't it wonderful, autonomous cars are here, well, they're not here. They're not going to be here anytime soon, and there are more and more problems they're finding. But at the same time, we've got great hybrid cars coming along. You know, these are cars that are much, much, much more fuel efficient and use battery stuff, and even some of the plug-in electric cars I've driven this year. They're fantastic. They're wonderful, but we're not talking about technology that's actually here now available. Everybody's in love with this future autonomous car thing that's just smoke and mirrors.
Mm.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I actually want to ban the term, because
autonomous cars.
Well, people have an idea. You know, when I speak to people, when I speak to the public, you know, you guys have a better handle at the media, the automotive media. Other media doesn't. What people think about is, when they think autonomous cars, you know, the number one thing that they'll say or they make a joke about is, you know, I'm really looking forward to when I can go down the pub and I call the car up and it'll pick me up and it'll drive me home.
Mm.
Right?
Correct.
That is what they're thinking of. They're not thinking about, and I understand why they don't think about it, but the reality is that the features that will ultimately make a car autonomous like that, which may or may not happen in my lifetime, but it's the safety features will make it virtually impossible to have an accident. If you want to hit another car, you're going to have to be determined to do it.
Yeah, so that's the thing. Yeah, there'll be cars that talk to each other. They know where they are all the time, to each other.
Other media, as you said, Paul, do an appalling job. I mean, you know, they're all sitting there typing with one hand, basically, thinking, you know, when they're talking about autonomous cars, because they don't understand it. They don't understand the technology. They don't understand the legal constraints. They don't understand the technical constraints. And, you know, they have a faith in technology that anyone that knows anything about technology knows, don't put that much faith in it. Because there's one thing that engineers in this industry, they will not sign off on stuff at the big car makers.
Mm-hmm.
They will not sign off on stuff until they are 100% sure that it's safe. Yeah.
Well, I'll give you an example, and this involves a brand that Mac is fairly close to, but I was driving in Italy once with a brand new safety system, which was claimed to, it was developed to stop you wandering out of your lane when you were tired. But we managed to find in one day two glitches that they hadn't come across, and they had done 5 million kilometres of testing of this system.
Right.
Now, the second generation of that car, when it came out, I remember talking to the chief safety engineer. I just looked down and said, is this from what I told you? And he went, yes. And what it did, instead of just doing the thing automatically, it now has cameras, so it looks to make sure there isn't anybody in the blind spot. But they hadn't, you know, this is some of the world's best technology, the world's best people. They don't get it right first time.
And the thing is, this was 5 million kilometres of testing, and this fault came up on less than a kilometre of road.
Right.
In one place, at one time, in one instance.
Yeah.
So it was changed, the software and the programming was changed to take that into account.
And I found that was amazing that that sort of thing happens. And yet, you know, like for Christmas, I got a book about air crash investigations, which is wonderful for somebody who spends a lot of time on aeroplanes.
Yes.
If you look at the amount of, you know, you look at the companies like Boeing and Airbus, which have got amazing resources and wonderful, you know, but the technology goes wrong on those things. You know, the Dreamliner, the 787 Dreamliner uses lithium-ion batteries, and they were a huge problem early on in the case.
Yeah, they caught fire.
Yeah, correct. But it got to production. Airplanes flew with these faults in them. You know, most of the car companies don't really want, you know, they really are great people. They're doing the best job they can, blah, 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 blah. But, I mean, there's another brand, let's call it BMW, who brought out the first of those in-car infotainment systems with a controller called iDrive. Well, basically, for the first 5 years, the people had that in their cars were beta testers because there were so many faults with it. Because some young smart engineer thought it was a great idea, but they hadn't done enough due diligence on the system, you know. And Mac and I could sit here; we could do this show for the next day without stopping, and come up with a question or a problem or a doubt or whatever about autonomous cars for all of that 24 hours. That's how complicated it is. I mean, in America, they've now got a thing called they're developing a thing called the 5 second rule. And the 5 second rule says that if your car's in autonomous mode, you have to be able to retake control of the car manually as a person inside 5 seconds.
Yeah.
So you want to tell me how that's an autonomous car? Because all these people who are in love with the things, they think they can drive. They think they can be driven when they're drunk. They think they can do all their emails. They think all this other stuff. Well, the Americans aren't looking at it remotely that way yet.
It's not a pod between terminals at Frankfurt Airport or Singapore. We've got to go. Yeah. Paul, sorry we've run out of time. We will have you back next year, and particularly post-Detroit and some of the other motor shows, to talk about what you've seen.
Yeah, that'll be great. Yeah, I'm looking forward to Detroit. It's the first show of the year, apart from appalling weather and stuff that makes me sick and quiet in my room for days on end.
Yeah, well, there's a long story there. We'll touch on that another time.
Yeah, but it'll be great. Yeah, it's going to be another great year. I see no reason why things are not going to keep racing ahead, so I'm looking forward to all that.
Cool.
And interacting with the industry in my 41st year as a motoring journalist.
There you go. Paul Gover from Cars Guide. Great to talk to you.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.